Welcome all the devotees. So we're on fifth canto, second chapter, verse 18. Second chapter, verse 18. This is part of the verse. Are we reading these? This is prose. This is not written in a poetic form. So there is no
kind of
rhyme to it. But we can try to do it. Sukhdev Goswami wrote some of these verses in the prose format. Maybe because he was describing the women, the beauty of the women, every part of their body, this, that. So he just did not feel like saying it in a poetic format. He just wrote it as a prose, being a brahmachari. Sacha tatatasya vira yuthapate buddhi shila rupa vaya shriya odrayena Parakshipta manatena sayayatu. It's okay, I will just read. Ayuta parivatsara upalakshnam. Kalam jambudipa patina bhama. Swarga bhogan bubuje. So this chapter and the chapter before is trying to get up to the appearance of Lord Rishabhdev. So the first chapter of the fifth canto talks about Maharaj Priyavarta. The next chapter talks about Agnidra, who is the son of Priyavarta. And Agnidra is further going to have a son called Nabi, and Nabi will have Lord Rishabhdev as his son. So that's where we're going. So in this verse, translation, attracted by the intelligence, learning, youth, beauty, behavior, opulence, and magnanimity of Agnidra, the king of Jambudipa, the master of all heroes, Purvachitti lived with him for many thousands of years and luxuriously enjoyed both worldly and heavenly happiness. So please repeat. Attracted by the intelligence, learning, youth, beauty, behavior, opulence, and magnanimity of Agnidra, the king of Jambudvipa, and the master of all heroes, Purvachitti lived with him for many thousands of years and luxuriously enjoyed both worldly and heavenly happiness. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. By the grace of Lord Brahma, King Agnidra, and the heavenly girl Purchitti found their union quite suitable. Thus, they enjoyed worldly and heavenly happiness for many thousands of years. The purport is not very far from the translation, right about there. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here is the history that King Agnidra met with Puruchitti and they enjoyed heavenly and worldly happiness for many thousands of years, had 9 children also, and oldest of them was King Nabi. Srila Prabhupada mentions King Agnidra in another place in a purport while trying to explain some other factors, so I have brought that for you because there is not very much in this purport that we can discuss. But if there is a question, we could take that in what we have read so far. Okay, guess not. It is explained that a serpent is to be feared. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking. A serpent is to be feared because of its poisonous fangs. But if those fangs are broken, the serpent, although it seems fearsome, is not at all dangerous. Devotees, therefore, may see hundreds and thousands of beautiful women with fascinating bodily movements and gestures, but not be allured, whereas such women would make ordinary yogis fall. So Srila Prabhupada is trying to draw a distinction between the yogis and the devotees here. And then he gives some examples. Even the advanced yogi Vishwamitra broke his mystic practice to unite with Menaka and beget a child known as Shakuntala. The practice of mystic yoga, therefore, is not sufficiently strong to control the senses. Another example is Prince Agnidra, whose attention was drawn by the movements of Puruchitti, the Apsara, simply because he heard the tinkling of her ankle bells. In the same way, Vishwamitra was also attracted by tinkling bangles of Menaka. Prince Agnidra, upon hearing the tinkling bangles of Purvachitti, immediately opened his eyes to see her beautiful movements as she walked. The prince was also very handsome, as described herein. His eyes were like buds of lotus flowers. As he opened his lotus-like eyes, he could immediately see that the Apsara was present by his side. There is another purport in another part of the Srimad Bhagavatam that actually joins this point with this one and to the next. This is actually from the first canto, sixth chapter, the purport of verse 35. Srila Prabhupada is explaining yoga further to differentiate between yogic practice and devotional service. Yoga aims at controlling senses. By practice of mystic process of bodily exercise in sitting, thinking, feeling, willing, concentrating, meditating, and at last being merged into the transcendence. One can control the senses. The senses are considered like venomous serpents. And the yoga system is just to control them. On the other hand, Narad Muni recommends another method for controlling the senses in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda. So it's further differentiating how devotional service or devotional path is so much more superior to the yogic practice or yoga path. The senses are transcendently engaged. Thus, there is no chance of their being in sense satisfaction. The senses want some engagement. To check them artificially is no check at all. Because as soon as there is some opportunity for enjoyment, the serpent-like senses will certainly take advantage of it. There are many such instances in the history. Just like Vishwamitra Muni falling victim to the beauty of Menaka. But Thakur Haridas was allured at midnight by a well-dressed prostitute Maya, and still she could not induce that great devotee into her trap. So direct comparison Srila Prabhupada is giving, that somebody considered so advanced as Vishwamitra fell in his yogic practice, whereas somebody fixed in the chanting of the holy name, fixed in his devotional service, such as Haridas Thakur, did not fall for the prostitute. So, how much better the devotional service is. Srila Prabhupada said at many instances that we have to use our senses, we have to use our mind, we have to use everything that we have in the service of Krishna, rather than just try to withdraw everything and try to artificially some kind of renunciation, some kind of tyag. But it is better to use whatever we have for Krishna. A practical example from Srila Prabhupada. This was the time when this movement was exploding. Srila Prabhupada was around. And the movement was just, was a Hare Krishna explosion. श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की, श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर भगवान की, नीताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। सो एट वन टाइम वेरी प्रोमिनेंट डिवोटी एट दैट टाइम वॉज तमाल कृष्ण गोस्वामी। आई डोंट नो इफ यू हैड टेकन संन्यास एट दैट टाइम, बट तमाल कृष्ण गोस्वामी वन डे अप्रोच श्रील प्रभुपाद आफ्टर रीडिंग द बुक। मैनी ऑफ अस और ऑलमोस्ट ऑल ऑफ अस जॉइंड आफ्टर द बुक्स वर अराउंड, बट सम ऑफ दीज डिवोटीज दे जॉइंड आवर मूवमेंट व्हेन देयर वर नो बुक्स, हार्डली एनीथिंग टू रीड, एंड श्रील प्रभुपाद वाज स्टिल कंपाइलिंग, ट्राइंग टू keep up with the publishing schedule and everything, or let's say everybody else was trying to keep up with Srila Prabhupada publishing these books. So they did not have very much to read, but as the books were coming out, devotees were trying to take advantage of learning from what Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his purports. So Tamal Krishna Goswami, after reading some kind of purport, came to a conclusion that at the end of my life, I have to be thinking of Krishna and Krishna only in order to go back to Godhead. So, Tamal Krishna Goswami, as close as he was to Srila Prabhupada, ran to Srila Prabhupada, said, Srila Prabhupada, this is what I am understanding. Srila Prabhupada gave a very deep, yes. I said, Srila Prabhupada, how is this going to happen? Because we could leave our bodies at any time. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you could leave your body at any time. But Srila Prabhupada, the only thing we worry about is how to get the instruments to the devotees for the Harinam, how to get the books out to the book distributors for distributing the books. And we're just worried about all this management and administration all day. We don't have time to think of Krishna. So what would happen if we left our body just worrying about all these things and we leave and there is no Krishna, because we were not thinking of Krishna. We were not thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. So Srila Prabhupada, how is it going to work? So Srila Prabhupada understood his question, sat him down very close to him and looked in his eyes and said, if you give one lifetime to the propagation of the Harinam Sankirtan as given by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just one lifetime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will make sure that you go back to Godhead no matter what you are thinking. This is Srila Prabhupada's personal guarantee. And I'm sure it's open to all of us. The only thing we have to do is dedicate this one lifetime to the propagation of Shri Krishna, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtana. Help Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his movement, and he will help you to achieve the highest goal of the human life. That's a guarantee. Coming from Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. Any questions so far? In one place, Srila Prabhupada also explains as to how Menaka was actually able to win Vishwamitra. Because before Menaka, there was another Apsara who came to try to make Vishwamitra fall. What was her name, Maharaj? This Apsara, she was very puffed up of her beauty. So she just wanted to attract Vishwamitra by her beauty only. And Vishwamitra was very strict. And when Vishwamitra figured this out, he cursed her to become a stone statue. And she became a stone statue. Then Indra asked, Menaka, you go. Now Menaka, she cannot say no to Indra, but she said, one of my friends has already died trying to get this yogi. How am I going to do this? So she used another method. What was that method? Humbly serving. She did not try to entice Vishwamitra so much by her beauty, but she tried to entice him by serving him. She will get up before he would and go to the river and take a bath and all and come back. And on the way back, she would bring the flowers and everything for his puja and all that. So when he would wake up and say, oh, somebody's already brought the flowers for the puja and everything, she would bring him water, she would cook for him, meaning cook for his offering. And that way, Vishwamitra fell for Menaka. Vishwamitra, his real name from birth was Vishwaratha. And he was born in a royal family. He was a son of a king. He was a prince. And Vishwamitra, who was called Vishwaratha at that time, was very, very ambitious. Very ambitious. So what he did is by his ambitions, by his ambitious qualities, he actually almost brought his whole kingdom to the verge of death. How? When the kings go and attack other kings in order to become a Maharaja, emperor, get more wealth, get more land, so on and so forth. They always do it in the time when it's not the time to sow the crop or cut the crop. Because the soldiers are also helpful with the cultivation of food grains to survive on. You have to have grains to survive on. So it's basic necessity. And if you neglect the basic necessity, there's no grains. If there's no grains, what are you going to feed the king, the kingdom, or the people, or the soldiers? What are you going to feed them? Gold? Diamonds? Or other riches that you picked up from other kings? You cannot live on that. You need food. So he was so ambitious, he would take the soldiers out and stay out the entire year, winning more and more kingdoms. And the result was, back home, there is no crop. And now he's engaging the other kings and their soldiers into the battle at wrong times. So even he won them, they have no crop either. Now he has this whole humongous army of people, of soldiers and army leaders and everything, and he's got no food to feed them. So he found out that there is Maharshi Vasishtha also living in the outskirts of his kingdom. And Maharshi Vasishtha actually had a cow whose name was Surbhi. And that one cow was able to produce not only unlimited amount of milk, it was able to produce unlimited amount of ghee and yogurt and paneer and cheese and ready-made food, everything, everything. The laddus, the gulab jamuns, the halwa, you name it. This is the Surbhi cow, not just giving milk. So when Vishwarath found out that he has this cow and that one cow can solve all my problem, I have a few hundred thousand soldiers over here to feed and there is no crop anywhere, there is nothing to feed them. That one cow will feed all of my soldiers. So he sent some soldiers, go get that cow. The soldiers go to Maharshi Vasishtha's ashram and say, oh, by the way, the king wants your cow. So your king wants Surbhi? I said, no. I'm not giving Surbhi to your king. How dare you say no to the king? You know, all of the armies, we have hundreds of thousands of army. If you don't give us the cow, we're just going to take her anyways. So it's better, Vasishtha is in your favor. You give us the cow nicely. If not, we're going to take the cow and we're also going to ruin your ashram. And all of these brahmacharis you have here, they are no match for hundreds of thousands of soldiers behind. And Vasishtha said, no, go and tell your king, Surabhi is not for sale. Nobody can blackmail me enough to give Surabhi. That's it. So the soldiers went and told the king, Vishwaratha. And Vishwaratha is fuming mad. Oh my God, this one little sage dare say no to a world winner? I have conquered all directions. I am the most powerful king in this whole world. And this one little sage, he dares to not listen to me. Okay. We go attack the ashram now. Little did they know, Surbhi was not only able to produce all the food, she was also able to produce well-trained heavenly soldiers coming right out of her body to attack these soldiers back. So this army of Vishwaratha's soldiers was lost. they could not fight Surbhi alone. All of the power that Vishwarath was accumulating, thinking that he is going to become the most powerful person on this earth in every way, all failed right in front of Vishwaratha's eyes. That opened up some Gyan Chakshu in his head, that what I have been thinking is power is not really power. I have so many subjects now. I have so much gold, unlimited amount of gold and jewels and precious metals and precious stones. But without food grains, all of this is worth nothing. I rule over the whole earth, but if there is no grains, I am worthless. Whereas this little sage, he is the most powerful thing in the whole world because he has this one cow that can feed unlimited amounts of people and can also produce all these soldiers coming out of her body that I cannot defeat Vashishtha in any way, shape or form. There is just no way I can do anything with Vashishtha. So that's what triggered in his mind, that okay, I do want to be the most powerful person on the face of the earth, but I guess I chose the wrong path. Because of being born in a royal family or Kshatriya family, I wanted to rule the world in that way, but I have been proven wrong. So I'm going to do it right this time. So then he goes for tapasya and tries to get something like Surbhi or more that way and try to become the most powerful person on earth in that sense. So that's the pastime of Vishwaratha after he... There are several stages of the sage. And when he was reaching quite a high stage in his yogic practice, Indra became worried that he wants to be the most powerful king. He's a very ambitious person. What if he asks for my throne? What if he asks for Indra's throne from Lord Brahma? Because now once he becomes Brahma Rishi, Lord Brahma will give him anything he wants. And this person is so ambitious that he wants the most powerful kingdom of the world, he may ask for my throne. Because Indra is not dependent on production of food grains. All the kings on the planet Earth, they're dependent on the food grains, not Indra. So that's why he sent this Apsara to disturb Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra was the name given to Vishwaratha by Maharshi Vashishth only. Maharshi Vashishth became very happy and impressed that Vishwaratha is going to give up this criminal life, because from the standard of Maharshi Vashishth, this king was absolute criminal. He was no king. To him, he was a criminal, because you are fighting your battles at the time when it's time to sow the crop. You're still fighting your battle when it's time to cultivate the crop. So now you're taking the whole, all the people, all your pupils who are your followers, who you are trying to protect, You're driving them into starvation and dying that way. So that is criminal. So Maharshi Vasishtha was very happy that, okay, he came out of the criminal business and he wants to go into Brahminical business. So, right from that time, there are examples that you, in order to become a Brahmana, you don't have to be born in a Brahmana family. You can become a Brahmana by guna and karma, which don't necessarily come from birth. They can. There is no law against it. They can come by birth. But it's not necessary that the guna or karma will come from birth. So if we behave in a Brahminical way, we have Brahminical guna and karma, we are Brahmins. And if we are Brahman by birth, but we do not behave that way, we have no right to call ourselves a Brahmin. And of course, then there is the Vaishnavas, who are above all of these Brahmanas and modes. So, Srila Prabhupada has compared this pastime with Agnidra and Purvachitti with the pastime of Vishwamitra and Menaka. In the next purport, actually, that I brought for you, Srila Prabhupada mentions that, oh, it's a short one, I can read it. This is the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Verse 16. In the scriptures, there is mention of apad dharma, or occupational duty at the time of extraordinary happenings or circumstances. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example of that. It is said that sometimes Vishwamitra had to live on flesh of dogs. In some extraordinary dangerous position. In case of emergency, one may be allowed to live on flesh of animals of all descriptions, but that does not mean that there should be regular slaughterhouses to feed animal eaters, and this system should not be encouraged by the state. No one should try to live on flesh in ordinary times simply for the sake of palate. If anyone does so, the king or executive head should punish him for gross enjoyment. So here is the reference of the time of starvation that we were talking about. There is no food, there is no food grains, and Vasishtha refused to give Surbhi, so Vishwaratha and his pupil were forced to live on anything and everything that they could find, as bad as they actually had to eat dog's flesh to survive. In China, they still do that. Anything that moves, they make pickles with cockroaches. They make a preparation with ants. They eat, cook and eat the worms. They eat the monkeys. I'm sorry for grossing you out this morning. Any questions or comments? how's someone's ambition or desire related to their guna and karma. There's a direct relation. Whatever your guna and karma is, that's what your desire and ambition is going to be. So let's look at the four varnas, for example. So people who have, human beings that have Brahminical qualities and they perform Brahminical actions like studying the scriptures, teaching the scriptures, and so on, their ambitions are on that side. They don't want to, you will not find a Brahminical minded person who's studying and teaching scriptures. You ask him, what is your hobby? What do you really want to do? Oh yeah, I really want to open a slaughterhouse, you know. That won't happen. Kali Yuga, anything is possible, but really, it doesn't make any sense. So your desires and your ambitions are going to be in the same direction as your guna and karma is. Like Dhruv Maharaj, when he was going to the forest, it was stopped by Narad Muni. And what did Narad Muni say? You are a young little boy, so what? Your mother insulted you. It doesn't matter. Go back home, go play. No, I won't do that. Dhruv Maharaj refused. Then Narad Muni tried to explain the philosophy to Dhruv Maharaj that, look, whatever good comes, bad comes, sukha or dukha, happiness or distress, comes as the arrangement of the Lord. Just accept it. One should accept whatever comes, happiness or distress, that is good quality, this, that. And what did Dhruv Maharaj say? No. No. I'm not willing to accept distress that easily. And then he gives the reason why. He said, I am born in a Kshatriya family. I am a royal prince. I cannot accept happiness and distress so easily. And if it takes that I have to perform tapasya to get what I want, I will perform tapasya. Nobody is going to stop me from that. So, in a way, he is disregarding his spiritual master, but his spiritual master is happy with that because he's just testing that how determined this person is in his quest. A young little boy, I send him to the forest and give him all the process of doing the tapasya and all that, and he comes back tomorrow. And what did I just do? Really nothing. So Narad Muni just wanted to test this boy. So Dhruv Maharaj explained that my ambitions and desires are going in the same direction as my guna and karma that I have, not only by birth, but also by practice. I'm not a Kshatriya just by birth. I am full of guna and karma of being a Kshatriya king or a Kshatriya prince. So I'm not going to accept that easily, this distressful situation. I'm not going to accept insult from my stepmother that easily. I'm going to do what it takes to give it back to her. So I want the kingdom bigger than my father's, bigger than Brahma's. That's what I want. That's his guna and karma. That's his desire and his ambition. That's how it goes. All right? Any other questions or comments? Going once, going twice, okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Nitai Gaur Premanande.